Welcome back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And my understanding is, Margaret, you want to sing, right?
No, I don't want to sing, but there is something we need to work out, so I thought we could work it out on the air.
And what is that?
Well, it is the rain, the park, and other things. I've given it a feel that I'm hoping, if you want to be perfectly honest. Excuse me for a moment. I didn't do it into the microphone, did I? Did I?
It's just disgusting.
Well, it's a comment, Phil. Until this radio show is going along in the way that I think it should...
Well, you don't run this radio show. I do.
Yes. And until I do, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, that's her constitutional right.
No, it's not her constitutional right to belch on air anytime she wants to. My constitutional right, then, if you have the right to do that, then I have the right to fire you.
Well, then why don't you?
I've got a good mind to do it, I'll tell you that.
Well, you need me. You need me a lot more than I need you.
Oh, yeah, right. So what is it with the rain, the park, and other things?
What it is this. I have, and with knock wood... You know, a lot of people have talked about the cow sills, but no one does anything about them, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, we know the cow sills, we know the music that they've made, even this newer generation knows the music they've made. I was listening to the park, the things, whatever the song is called.
Call the rain the park and other things.
Yeah, Robert knows that, and he's black.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, it's kind of a white person song.
Hey, man, anybody listen to that song?
What do you mean it's a white person's song?
Well, it is. No self-respecting black person can even dance a little bit to something like that.
Man, why don't you just shut up and let me dance to what I want to dance to?
You trying to tell me you dance to the thing, the park, and the rain?
What is it with you guys, the thing, the park, and the rain? What's the name of the song?
I thought it was the park and the thing.
It's the rain, the park, and other things.
All right.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, you had it.
Will you guys shut up? What about the park, the thing?
The rain, the park, and other things. Susan Cowsill apparently knows a listener to our program. And last night I was online and I was experimenting with some lyrical changes to the song. It's no big deal, Phil. They can go along. It's a nice little song and I'm sure that the Cowsills have made their money on it. That having been said, I was experimenting with some things. I posted it on Facebook, and I got some favorable response. One of the people responding said, I have forwarded this to Susan Cowsill.
Okay, and she's in the group?
No, she's just someone with the name Cowsill. Yes, she's in the...
Yeah, she's in a group. She's in a group.
Okay, I'm sorry. And so, have you heard from her?
No, I haven't heard from her, but I really didn't intend for that to be forwarded. That man did that as a favor. But the experiment was giving the park the...
The rain.
The rain, the park, and other things, I'm sorry. Giving it more of a vampiric. You know what I mean by vampiric?
Yeah, vampire.
Wow. I didn't think you'd get it that fast, but...
What is it?
Vampire, vampiric, you're giving it, what, you're making it into a vampire song?
Well, I thought it could be a vampire singing about a girl that he saw.
Yeah, in a make her undead.
Yes, to make her one of the undead.
Okay, I mean, Halloween's over.
Doesn't make any difference if Halloween's over, Phil. I saw her standing in the rain, raindrops falling on her. She had a look on her face that was dumb, and I knew, but...
I knew.
It would make me, you see?
She had a look on her face that was dumb.
Well, yes, because it's a vampire that is stalking this dimwit, but she's beautiful, you see? And then I knew, and I had Bud helping me with it. Go, Bud. Bud.
What?
I go, and I knew...
Oh, I knew.
She would make me happy, slap happy, wacky. I changed that a little bit. Flowers in her hair, flowers on her crypt. Doot, doot, doot. See what I'm saying?
Boy, that's a real light and lively song, that one, you know.
Well, Phil, hold the phone there, Caballero. Are you aware of the fact that kids today are completely into the whole vampire thing? These kids, you know, you'd think they'd be just as happy drinking buckets of blood out of someone's neck as doing anything else. That's what they're into.
I don't think that's it. I think people are fascinated by the vampire myth, the vampire story. We always will be. It's an interesting, fun little story. It scares us. It fascinates us. The idea of immortality is obviously very attractive. The idea of being immortal and having the run of the night, that's total party time. It definitely is something a young person would like. And so to that end, yeah, we're fascinated by it. But the kids today would just as soon spend hours drinking buckets of blood as doing anything else.
Well, what?
Yeah, a lot of them would.
Oh, get out of here. No, they wouldn't. That's just, they're fascinated with, adults are fascinated with the whole vampire thing. Now, you know, I got into it through Anne Rice's books, and I don't read fiction, but I read that because it was, to me, it was a lot of fun. It's just a fun, cool, scary, spooky, weird tale that will forever fascinate us because it has so many different themes in it. So your whole point is what, though?
Well, my point is I think the song lends itself to the vampire, V-A-M-P-Y-R. This is the vampire, you see?
Yeah, that's how they say it, like in the old country.
Yes, exactly, Robert. They say it that way in the old country.
That's great. And?
What a jacket.
Well, what do you want me to say? Big deal, vampire. So what?
So I wrote some lyrics. You want me to do it now?
Well, yeah, go ahead. We have a couple of minutes.
All right. I saw her standing in the rain, raindrops falling on her. She looked kind of dumb. I walked up to her and I said, I knew, but...
I knew.
She would make me happy.
Batty, wacky.
Flowers in her hair, flowers on her tomb.
On her tomb.
I know, you know, it goes into that, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and then something along, I love the flowers, she really looked like she needed a stake, something like she needed a stake through the heart, I don't know what.
She's going to put a stake through the heart of the woman that he wants to turn into a vampire.
I don't know how it goes, Phil.
Well, if you're going to sing a song about vampires.
Anyway, the song goes, and I knew I'd make her undead, undead. You know?
Cold as ice.
Right. She's undead. Woo! And so it goes like that. Now, Susan Cowsill, who has to go through life with that name, get a load of that.
Well, you know, you're not going to make friends with somebody knocking their name.
Did I do it to her face?
Maybe she's listening.
Yes, sure.
You never know. I mean, and if she is...
Well, Susan, I'm kidding then, but... if you're not listening, I mean it. So I was thinking, you know, what do you think she'd say?
I think she'd probably say, isn't that funny? Ha, ha, ha. And I don't care. Do whatever you want. The song is what it is. You're not going to change the song now. It's always going to be what it is.
Well, what are you saying, Phil? Are you trying to tell me that it would be treated as a parody?
Yes, it would be treated as a parody.
Well, I don't mean it that way.
Margaret, nobody is going to take you changing the lyrics of The Rain, The Park, and Other Things into some kind of a vampire song, as you put it, and take it any other way other than it is a parody. It's a joke. You're making fun. No one's going to say, wow, we've changed The Rain, The Park, and Other Things.
Well, thanks a lot, Phil. Thank you for that vote of confidence. What a D-word. Seriously.
Douchebag?
That'll do.
Oh, okay, well, that'll do. You know, Margaret, I'm sorry that I do not give you more support for somebody's screwball ideas, but I'm telling you, it's a screwball idea. If it was my song, if it was your song, and somebody came along and said, I know how to improve your song. Gee, how's that? Turn it into a song about a guy making a girl undead.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't go, turn it into a song about a guy making a girl undead. Thus telegraphing to the person that I think it's a rotten idea, even as I'm giving it to him.
All right, look, I said what I said. Good luck.
If I can find a karaoke version of it, can I sing it?
Yes, go ahead. All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Did we finish up with that god-awful, disgusting, and despicable story about the Miami Dolphins? Why don't you guys... Let me tell you something, Dolphins. It's been a lot of years since the Super Bowl. It's been a lot of years since Don Shula. It's been a lot of years since a lot of things, including a playoff game. You suck. Your team sucks. You just, as an organization, you're a disgrace. And as the team that at one time played a perfect season, won back-to-back Super Bowls, and was the absolute state-of-the-art, star-quality product of the National Football League, you've fallen a long, long way. I'm Phil Hendry.
Great.
We'll be right back here, world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhenryshow.com, and online at philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Head on over to our online store. And all that, man, all that. Plus, right now available for download is our Game of the Week from Sunday and Saturday's bonus show. Hey, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhenryshow.com. Lots of other stories to get into here as we finish out this Monday night. What a rough Monday night it's been. Not because you guys did anything wrong, because I was... hung up on the west side. What happened today is I was hung up on the west side of Los Angeles doing our podcast with the great Dana Gould. What a great guy, and funny as hell. And Dana is a longtime writer. What are you laughing at, bud?
Yeah, the beret you're wearing is all messed up.
Yeah, man, it's hanging off the front of your head.
Oh, sorry.
What are you wearing that ridiculous thing for? You're an American. You're not a Frenchman. You're not... What are you trying to be, wee-wee?
Yeah, you're all trying to be wee-wee, monsieur.
What do you mean I'm all trying to be? It's my beret, man. Anyway, Dana Gould, great guy. And Thursday night, he debuts his Showtime special. So watch for Dana Gould on Showtime on Thursday night. And then watch for him on TNT in a brand new series called Mob City with Dana Gould. And he's appearing in Atlanta, I think, shortly. And he will be on the Bobby Dooley podcast within the next week and a half as well. So look for that. But that's where we were this afternoon, and then had to jump in the car and haul ass back from the west side of L.A.
Well, that is a long way from there to the El Pacifico. And I would think that you'd hire a car service so that you will be refreshed and well-napped.
No, I didn't hire a car service. I got into my own car and I drove. And it was a long way, but we made it in time. But, you know, we had about 20 minutes, a half hour to spare. So it wasn't the easiest thing. Nonetheless, we made it. And it was well worth... Oh, and I ran into, as I said, Fraser Smith and Jay Johnstone. And those guys are a riot. Had a great time talking to them. All right, what do we got here?
All right, hit it, bud. I want you to listen to... What is that? Please turn that off. There we go. I saw the standing in the rain. I'm doing more of a sing-song. Raindrops falling on me, see? I looked her face. She looked about as dumb as they come. Go ahead, bud.
I knew.
She would make me a good nourishing meal. All of that blood.
Wait, hold on.
What are you doing?
Turn that off, bud, before I go nuts. Thank you. Now, what is this?
What's what? It's a song I'm singing, for God's sake.
She would make me a nourishing meal.
Yes.
Come on, Margaret, don't flip your lid.
That was great.
Trying to get this numbskull.
Don't call me a numbskull. I'll throw you the hell out of here. How about that?
Yeah, okay, boss man.
Yeah, but see, I don't come off like a big boss man or something.
Well, I am the big boss man.
All right, here we go, bud. Three, and I saw it standing in the rain. It being the human girl that I saw. That's what we look upon humans as being, just it. 2, 3, 4. I knew. She would make me a good meal, a good meal. What's wrong?
Did you practice this?
I'm rehearsing it, yes.
Because every time I hear it, I saw it standing in the rain.
Well, she made a change later on, you know.
Yeah, we figured in order for it to be more, I don't know, more good, you know.
Yes, for it to be more good, we want it to... What do you mean more good?
We want it to... The vampire looks at the human more as a meal.
So that's why she, he, it says, I saw it standing in the rain?
Well, I'm playing this as a male vampire.
I don't understand why the cow seals would want to listen to this crap, if you'll pardon me for saying.
My God, you finally got it said.
It's not like it's a big revelation, Margaret. It sucks. You know it, I know it, everybody knows it.
Hold on for a minute, okay? Do you mind? Do you mind if I try to make something with my life and with my art? Do you mind if I try and turn this song into something while you sit there like some one-eyed whore making jokes? Play it. Play it.
2, 3, 4.
I saw it standing in the rain, looking as dumb as they come. And I thought, I'm kind of thirsty. Let's take a shot. 2, 3, 4, go. And I knew. It would make a good meet. Never mind.
Where are you going?
F it.
F it.
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah, well, that's the brightest thing you guys have said.
No, if you're going to sit there staring at me like I'm something that, like I'm something out of a crypt.
Well, well, Margaret, if you're playing a vampire.
No, I thought it was a very original treatment.
It's fine. It ain't all that. It was fine, you know. But if you're going to change the lyrics every 2 seconds, I saw it standing in the rain, looking as dumb as it come, or as they come.
So?
That was different from the other lyric. I saw her standing in the rain, raindrops falling on her. You didn't change that at all in the very first time you did it. Then you change it to, I saw it standing in the rain. Then you change it to, looking as dumb as they come. Then you change it to, she might make a nourishing meal. And you don't think that's a parody, huh?
I wasn't looking at it that way, no.
Well, I got news for you. People that listen to that are going to laugh. And not necessarily in a bad way. They may think that you meant it to be funny.
Well, there's nothing more insulting than writing a song that you intend to be a very heartfelt and very transfixing ballad of love, and people laugh at it and go, you're such a great comedy writer.
Well, that's right. You're absolutely right. That is an insult. So if I were you, I'd rethink the whole project.
Jeez.
Go have yourself a white owl.
No. No, I'll just sit and think.
Yeah, you do that. All right, guys. So thank you very much for that, Margaret. I know that we haven't heard you sing in a while. What happened to, by the way, what happened to House of the Rising Sun?
Yeah, she don't go out down to, what's the name of that place?
I went to hell on earth. I don't want to talk about it.
She went to hell on earth the other night.
Now, what's hell on earth?
That's the name of a club. And they're going to do a gospel set. And that included she's going to do House on a Rising Sun.
Yeah, but apparently they rolled Stan Face for the money.
They didn't roll another guy. They rolled your road manager?
Yes, that's the second time in as many months.
Well, what did you do?
You don't want to know.
Yes, I do want to know. What'd you do?
Well, they called up Frank. Frank said he's going to have that guy Frenchie.
Frenchie from Montreal?
Yeah.
Okay, you're right. I don't want to know.
Yeah, I didn't think you would.
Okay. Well, you know, that's... Okay, I don't even want to know. Although I don't think rolling the road manager... You got to play... Frank is an idiot, man, if he's booking you into some toilet bowls like that.
Tell me about it.
All right. Anyway, welcome back, folks, to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. You know, Rob Ford is the mayor of Toronto, and he was smoking crack according to... Oh, well, at least according to some accounts, smoking crack caught on videotape, and then was off with his mother and his siblings over the weekend... having some family time, having some bonding time, apparently feeling very embattled, apparently feeling misunderstood, and just all that, and, you know, just all in a heap. And now he's returned to work amid calls for him to resign, and he says that he is not a drug addict. Now, Mayor Ford, or as they call him, the magistrate in Canada, because Canada is Canada. It ain't America. It's more about England than it is about America, even though it's a North American country. And I don't want to make any comments other than, why don't you people get real? And he's the mayor.
He is the Canadians can call him what they want.
Yeah, true. Mr. Ford is under pressure after Canadian police revealed they had recovered a video appearing to show him smoking from a crack cocaine pipe. A glass pipe. As in...
God made something better than crack cocaine. He kept that stuff for himself.
Right. We'll get into that story when we return, and also this story of Michelle Pfeiffer admitting to the fact that she had been in a cult that forbade food and water. You ready for that?
I heard something about that.
Yeah, that's another story forthcoming here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Get that. I'm telling you, bud, turn that stuff off, because it's not doing anybody any favors.
Sorry.
So that and more when we return here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 855-500-7445. Visit our online store at philhenryshow.com, and there you can pick up the new Ted's of Beverly Hills t-shirt as well as the Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie. And we also have a bunch of shot glasses that we're mailing out from contest winners last week, so if you're one of them, your shot glass on the way.
You just stood there grinning.
World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. We're here every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast. Michelle Pfeiffer, did you know Michelle Pfeiffer?
I met her a few times at various functions. Why?
Apparently, Michelle Pfeiffer was in a cult as a younger woman, according to this headline here in the National Funkadelia. I don't know what this is. This is the...
It's USA Today.
Okay.
What do you mean the National Funkadelia?
I don't know, man. There it is. There's the byline. I don't know where to look for bylines.
You kidding me or something, man? Right there.
Okay. Pfeiffer, I was in a cult that forbade food and water. Have you ever heard of this?
Oh, my God. The Breatharians. Yes, the Breatharians.
What's that?
It's a cult that believes, and it's not just a cult. There are different groups of Breatharians all over the world. It is an old yogic belief. I don't know if anyone has ever actually lived this way, although, Phil, you read the autobiography of a yogi, I believe, did you not?
Yes, I did.
Do you remember the part in there that claimed there was a sect or a cult or a group of yogis in India?
Yeah, that lived only on air. I remember that. I don't know.
What do you mean on air, like on a radio?
No, not on the radio. They lived by just breathing the air.
What?
That's what they claimed. Now, there's all kinds of claims that are made. I want to tell you one thing. I'm reading this book called Zealot.
I heard about that. I hear it's fantastic.
It's a very interesting book. It's a book about Jesus, but the author makes an effort to write about the historic Jesus. Now, this is a good man, this author. He was a born-again Christian as a high school student. He is originally from Iran.
There you go.
No, not there you go. The guy was from Iran and moved to America as a young child, became a born-again Christian in high school, but through his own dissatisfactions and questions, felt like he needed to know more about Jesus. And he felt like he needed to know more about the historic Jesus as opposed to the biblical Jesus. Now, here's the thing. The biblical Jesus does not comport necessarily with what we know of the history of the places and the history of the times. It does not necessarily meld with those events. You have, for instance, historically, at that time in Palestine, not just one guy by the name of Jesus who believed that he was, or his followers believed that he was the Messiah, or the King of the Jews, or what have you. There was about a half a dozen guys over the period of a couple of hundred years that were claiming to be this Messiah, that wanted to throw off the shackles of Rome, that wanted to bring a kingdom of God on earth, that wanted all of this stuff. So the reason why I'm bringing all of this up is because the one thing the author says in this book, Zealot, he says everything else about Jesus can be explained in the context of the time. For instance, Jesus never was born in Bethlehem. He wasn't born in Bethlehem. He was born in Nazareth. The gospel writers had to make his birthplace Bethlehem because that would then further add credibility to the prophecies. Because in those days, history was not as important as it is today. People didn't give a damn about history. What they cared about was the narrative. They cared about the legend. They cared about the story. They cared that the tale that was told was consistent and true, regardless of the historical context. History was not what it was about in those days. It was the prophecy. It was the predictions. It was the prophets. So if the prophet said that out of Bethlehem, this, that, and something else, then that better damn well be the case. But Jesus was from Nazareth. But here's the thing. The one thing about Jesus that the author claims is consistent with real life, and I'm not saying that this guy is writing everything about Jesus is phony baloney. I'm not saying that. He's just saying that some of the things just don't add up, folks. Nazareth was not a town where you were going to get work as a carpenter. Nazareth was a dirt poor mud hut, impoverished mud hole of a place. It wasn't a middle class burg at all. You're not walking around Nazareth making furniture. It ain't gonna happen. But there was a city close by, within walking distance, that Jesus very much probably did visit, did see Pharisees, did talk to people, and did do a lot of day labor as a carpenter. Now, the one area of his life that the author says is true is the miracle working. Now, understand something. He's talking about miracles as it appeared to the people back then.
Oh, so he's saying that they wouldn't necessarily be miracles?
No, he's not saying that. He's saying that you cannot discount what the people said. If they say they saw this man perform a miracle, then that's what they saw. Now, you and I today can say a couple of things about that. We can say it wasn't a miracle at all. We can say it was this, was that. Understand that what his job was, what he was trying to do, was to gain people's belief and trust and faith in him. It's very possible, because it was done by other such individuals in those days, others claiming to be the Messiah, it's very possible that Jesus engaged in a little bit of, well, if you will, trickery, sleight of hand.
You can't say that about Jesus. He's the Son of God and everything. He's not going to lie.
Yeah. All right. Okay, I'm just, you know. All right, let's say he didn't do that. Let's just say that he knew his audience and he knew the crowds, he knew the people very well, and he knew what they would respond to. And so he engaged in, I don't know if you want to say a performance, I don't want to call it that, but he did engage in a kind of a healing, in a kind of a miracle working, in a kind of a whatever you want to call it, that would play to the crowd. So there's no questioning whatsoever that there were miraculous things in the eyes of the people that this man did. Now, I bring it to this story about the Breatharians, because if these yogis in India are claiming to live on air, or live on breath, or live on the air of the oxygen around them, and there are people that will attest to that, who am I to say that it isn't? I can say, well, they're fooled somehow, or they've been shucked and jived somehow, or they're not exactly doing this, or they're not exactly doing that. That may be the case, but I'm not going to say the following thing. I'm not going to tell these people they didn't see what they saw. I'm not going to tell them not to believe, because that guy can't possibly be doing that. If that's what they're claiming, that's what they're claiming.
Well, do you believe people could live on just air?
I don't know.
Man, that's no answer at all. You got to commit to either yes or no.
No, I don't. I don't know.
Do you think it's possible that all a guy does is breathe and he's going to live?
Maybe. What do I know, man? I've seen things happen. You and I, we all know. We've been told this since the very beginning of our lives. We've had books. We've heard lectures. We've seen documentaries on the power of mind over matter. How many times have we heard that phrase, mind over matter? How many times have we heard people say a woman lifted a car off of a child when she saw that the child was going to be crushed by the car? I mean, what is that? Is that not something that is absolutely out of the norm?
But that is a physical, adrenaline-fueled reaction.
Yeah, that's not living your whole life.
Well, but it is something that we're not used to seeing. It was something that happened. You could even call it a miracle if you want. So why not? Why couldn't a guy live on just air for a period of time? Who knows? I'm not saying their whole lives.
What are you trying to... You believe that Michelle Pfeiffer...
No, I don't. Michelle Pfeiffer was with some... The story here is that Michelle Pfeiffer, quote-unquote, fell under the spell of a couple. She was living in Hollywood at the age of 20. This is 35 years ago. And she came under the spell of a couple who, quote, put her on a sustenance plan that nobody can adhere to, according to Ms. Pfeiffer. They were very controlling. I wasn't living with them, but I was there a lot, and they were always telling me I needed to come more. I had to pay for all of the time I was there, so it was financially very draining. So she just, you know, she got suckered in by some guru. And,
suckered. A minute ago you were saying that these people, if they perceive something to be true...
Well, she didn't, obviously. You guys asked me, do I believe that breatharians exist or that they can't exist? I said, I don't know. What she was into? Hell, she probably had a couple of clowns there that were trying to... And she wound up marrying actor Peter Horton. You may remember him from the TV show 30-something. She wound up marrying him, and he was doing research at the time on a role in a movie about followers of the Unification Church. And they were talking to an ex-Mooney, and he was describing the psychological manipulation, and according to Pfeiffer, she said, I just clicked. She realized I was in a cult. So Peter Horton, her first husband, helped her.
Oh, yeah, sure. Peter Horton. I think Michelle Pfeiffer is a far stronger woman than Peter Horton.
Margaret, there's no need to be dragging people down.
Well...
Anyway, so that's the story there, man. That's all I was trying to say. I'm not trying to say anything other than that. I'm trying to knock Jesus. I ain't trying to do that at all.
Yeah, but you talking about Jesus. He wasn't from Bethlehem.
Yeah, what about where the manger is?
It's not likely, man. I'm just telling you, it's not likely, according to the history of the times. It's not likely that Jesus was born in Bethlehem. If you're looking, and there is one historic reference to this man, Jesus, in the, I believe, the chronicles of a Jewish historian who says James, the brother of Jesus, the Messiah. Now, the reason why he called him the Messiah is because that was pretty standard in those days for any guy that came out of the wilderness talking about kingdom of God. Oh, yeah, here's another Messiah. Here comes another guy. King of the Jews was something that the Romans used, not because it was necessarily... they weren't mocking Jesus when they put that sign, King of the Jews, up. They were not mocking him. They were saying, this is his crime.
What does that mean?
They were basically saying, the crime this man who is crucified here, that you're seeing hanging from this cross, his crime is that he is King of the Jews. There is no King of the Jews. That is a that is an act of treason against the empire. There is a client king that Rome has installed. That was Herod. There were provincial governors. There's no king of the Jews. This man's crime is an act of treason to claim being king of the Jews. So it was not a mocking thing. It was the crime this man has committed is claiming that he has some authority, some claim to the Jewish people of this region, and that's not that's against the law. And he's not the first guy to have made that claim, Jesus. So anyway, it's really an interesting book. You read it. You tell me what you think. It's called Zealot. I picked it up at the airport when I was on my way back to D.C. I couldn't put it down. And I'm reading at any given time like three different books. It's a mind messer upper. You know.
You're gonna say a different word.
Yeah, maybe I was. All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Don't forget, we're online at philhenryshow.com, so you can pick up your backstage pass, which includes your games of the week, includes the big news feed, includes thousands of hours of archived material. It also includes the game of the week, all of that stuff there at philhenryshow.com. All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast and 1 a.m. on the East Coast. Coming up, we'll be at the San Francisco Sketch Fest at the end of January of 2014. Also an appearance of yours truly on Drunk History on Comedy Central. Now, report of Nazi-looted trove puts art world in an uproar. This is what I was mentioning earlier in the program. We finally got to this thing. There was no hint that the older man who called a couple of years back about selling a picture could be sitting on an unimaginable trove of art confiscated or banned by the Nazis. When the proffered work, Lion Tamer, by the German artist Max Beckmann, who's one of the great, great artists of German history, and really one of the fathers of the sort of surreal school, of 20th century. And I'm not an art guy, so...
Well, Max Beckmann, Phil, yes, along with Otto Dix and others, He experimented in the surreal and not impressionistic. It was surreal and was highly unusual, and certainly the kind of art that would not make Nazis happy, who had very much a traditional view of German art. It was all about the kinsman and the maiden, very boring, traditional pictures of folk art, which is what the Mr. Hitler and Mr. and Mrs.
No, that sounds right. Mr. and Mrs. Hitler. Who? Hitler and Goebbels?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, they're both men, Phil.
Well, I wouldn't want to disrespect them.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. So, this guy who calls up, he's some old creep, and he has this piece of art that he is offering called The Lion Tamer by German artist Max Beckmann. It was collected. The seller seemed to be a proper gentleman in Munich, dispensing with a lone, dusty art gem at the end of his life. It was a fantastic picture, recalled Carl Sachs Feddersen of the Cologne auction house Lempertz, who noted how pleased the auction house team was with the auction price, €864,000, or $1.17 million. However, when he learned on Monday that the Beckmann seller, Cornelius Gurlitt, age 80, had reportedly sat on hundreds of works, including art by Picasso and Matisse that were confiscated under the Nazis, or sold cheaply by owners desperate to flee Hitler, Mr. Feddersen was amazed. Imagine, he said, envisaging seeing and selling such a collection. Before the Beckmann was sold, the Bavarian authorities swooped in on Mr. Gurlitt's home to seize the rest of his treasure, according to the news magazine Focus, about 1,500 works estimated to be worth. Get a load of this, ladies and gentlemen. This guy, Mr. Gurlitz, is sitting on art that was stolen by the Germans. Now, you have to understand, they confiscated this because they considered it degenerate. I went to an exhibit at the L.A. Museum of Art about 10 years ago that was a recreation of one that had taken place in Berlin during the war. It was put on by the Nazis, and it was called Degenerate Art. They wanted to show the German people examples of what they considered degenerate art, meaning corrupt, degenerating, morally corrupting art, typical of the West, for instance, America with all of its black jazz musicians and its Jewish this and that. And this was recreated by the L.A. Museum. Well, the art that was there was amazing stuff. It was Otto Dix, it was Max Beckmann, it was all of these great artists who fled Germany before they wound up in a concentration camp, their art confiscated, stolen. And you would think that if the Germans thought it was so degenerate, they would have destroyed it. Thank God they didn't, because they knew the value of this. At the very heart and soul of the Nazis was not so much their desire to be morally upstanding. They were thieves, and they were corrupt officials. So they wanted to sell it, obviously, for its monetary value. Nazis were thieves, and so this art was stolen by the Nazis. It was hidden. A lot of it was found at the end of the war by what was called the Monuments Division of the U.S. Army and other armies. The Monuments Division sought out these stolen pieces of artwork, collected it, put it on display here in the United States, but then returned it to the countries of origin. Now we find that this guy, Mr. Gurlitz, is on 1,500 works of art estimated to be worth $1.4 billion. Focus said the works were seized after the police and customs officials entered Mr. Gurlitz's home in Munich in the spring of 2011 and confirmed the discovery would be one of the biggest finds of vanished art in years, but word of it left almost equally big questions unanswered. Why did the German authorities let more than 2 years pass before such a sizable find was disclosed? What will become of the recovered works of art? Did Mr. Gurlitz continue to make sales even after the raid? And where is he today? There are no reports that this guy Gurlitt has been detained or charged, and questions about the history of the artworks, including whether they were confiscated or subject to a forced or voluntary sale, would determine whether a current sale or auction would be judged legitimate. Since news of the find was first reported Sunday, the German authorities have come under fierce criticism in the art world as to why they did not make the discovery public. This is a huge story in the art world, folks. $1.4 billion worth of stolen art finally recovered, but who's this guy Görlitz? Where does he get off selling pieces for his own personal profit? Why did the Germans not tell the rest of the world what they'd found? The Germans have traditionally been very forthcoming. They should have come out with this list pronto, said Jonathan Petropoulos, the author of The Faustian Bargain, The Art World in Nazi Germany. That's the way the restitution works, calling it unconscionable that the authorities sat on the trove for 2.5 years, particularly because it appeared to be an exceptionally large find. The trail of the artworks, the magazine said, stemmed from an incident in September 2010 when Bavarian customs officials on a train from Switzerland to Germany became suspicious after finding Mr. Görlitz carrying 9,000 euros, or about $12,150, in crisp 500-euro notes. The inquiry spurred by the money eventually led investigators to the apartment in Munich, the magazine said, reporting that Görlitz had apparently lived there for decades, selling off pictures as needed over the years, to judge by empty frames found in his home. Get a load of that. The balls on this guy.
It was worth what?
$1.4 billion. This guy is sitting there selling this off for his own personal survival and enhancement, financial enhancement. This is art that belongs, if to nobody else, it belongs to the German people. It was the art of German masters. It may include other artwork from other parts of the world, parts of Europe. It belongs to the people of those countries. And this slob is selling it off. Germany finally finds it, and they don't let anybody know about it until Sunday. 2 years they sat on this, man. If I had that, I'd be a rich... We'll be back tomorrow night. Been nice talking to you guys. Nice seeing you. World Famous Phil Henry Show. Peace out. Goodbye, homegirl.